Okay, you might have to do a little bit of backup.
Our relationship with the Vietnamese people, our ability to provide reliable information.
This is from 65 onward.
From 65 on, yeah. Okay. Our reliable information on what was happening there, and occasionally to provide selected emergency assistance to individuals. I think that any of us need to keep our compassion as one element of what we're about.
Yeah.
In the most wrenching war situation.
Okay.
And my personal feeling is that I would have liked to have seen IVS continue to the very end of the war.
Beyond 71.
Recognizing that we have these public goals and we have our internal goals. And to me, that is not duplicitous. That's just the way you have to work in situations like that. If it came to the place where IVS could no longer be close to the Vietnamese, respond in compassion or with occasional technical assistance, and provide reliable information through the back doors that were available, then I think IVS should get out. But I don't think we were ever close to that. That's my answer.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer.
And that's basically the way I run programs now.
Well, I know, but you know, there's always the ambivalence of, you know, you wanted to keep the volunteers in the field, but you wanted to resign to make the statement and for yourself, because obviously you want to keep the volunteers in the field because you felt that they were doing something effective at that time.
That's right.
But then you also said that even, you know, extrapolating from your current job and work, you know how organizations continue to grow, and you see that, you saw that with AID, so is there, you know, the possibility that maybe not in 67, but maybe in 69 or 70, you know, that IVS should have closed down, and so therefore the question still had to be asked, and the answer was very good. Getting back to some of the other more general questions, and again, I don't know how some of these apply to you, because you've pretty much touched on a lot of some of this at one point or another, but how did you view IVS as an organization at that particular time?
When I left, or?
Yes, during your years of service as a volunteer up to Assistant Chief of Party.
Yeah. I was always proud to be in IVS. I was proud to be, to have co-workers who I regarded as extremely competent and sensitive, astute. I felt safe in the organization. I felt cared for.
Yeah.
And I felt like we had an organizational, what we would now call an organizational culture that encouraged testing, creativity, and risk-taking.
Okay. Good.
Now, I'm not sure I would have used that language back then, but upon reflection, I think that's where I stand.
Well, I think Garson Scher, also, we've talked about him two or three times here, and I've certainly talked to a lot of other people, but sometimes some people just keep on popping up.
Yeah.
He admires the administrative style of IVS at that time because of the risk-taking, that people were not micromanaged, that they really were let free to develop as they were capable of developing, you know, to borrow the Army's thing, to be all they could be.
Yeah.
You know, but this is for a obviously vastly different purpose. And how that works, especially when you have people who are dynamic and who are volunteering and willing to sacrifice it themselves. You know, I mean, if they were a bunch of corporate weasels who were only looking after their own pocket of power and money, well, then it doesn't really work so well, you know.
Yeah, but that's one of the implicit advantages in a volunteer organization that many volunteer managers don't understand. And that is that if you put a call out and ask for the best, and you ask for sacrifice and you ask for risk taking, that's who you're going to get.
Yeah.
And so you're going to get the best. And you don't have to run it through all kinds of psychologists or, I mean, maybe a little of that could help, but that's who's going to come.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily offer the most money. Maybe you can't offer them very much at all. And so people aren't going to, they're there because for some reason it's already existing here and now they're making it visible to themselves and the rest of the world. And to me that's sort of a basic principle of volunteerism in a voluntary organization. As soon as you try to compete in terms of salaries or in benefits, then you introduce a whole different set of people.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
But now the problem can be if, this is all reflection based on, the problem can be if you get all one type of people in an organization, all either leaders or all this or that, you've got a kind of a malformed monster. you need diversity too.
Yeah, well, yeah, you need some.
Gender diversity, and I'm more and more convinced of that, actually.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my babbling.
Well, it's a good babble. I mean, just to pause for myself here, and I put this back on again. Okay, so, yes, so I've asked you what you thought of IVS as an organization. I know, you know, we've asked people if they get the newsletter, if they make contributions on occasion, and you know, their level of involvement. Well, I know that you're on the board of directors, so that your involvement continues down to, to today, very strong. But looking back again at your own time as a volunteer, if you had to now say what a mission statement might have been for IVS at that time, what would it have been? You must work with those kinds of mission statements all the time.
Well, in retrospect, I would have emphasized development and justice making. That element was not in the self-definition of IVS.
At that time, the justice making.
The justice making. But as you heard me define the role for IVS as it developed and could have continued in, at least until 75, it was the justice making element that was key and provided the integrity for doing also the development work.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I think that those are the two chunks that would have been in there. I personally would have deliberately not have included the emergency response and refugee stuff that IVS was pushed into.
You would not have gotten into that.
No, I would not have gotten into that so much.
How come?
And while I think it's useful, we just were not an organization that had access to enormous amounts of emergency supplies of any kind.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that we really had something special to give in that area like maybe other organizations.
Okay. So it's nothing philosophically against refugee work?
No.
Okay.
But I think that IVS in that period really provided important moral leadership on several different levels. One was in the voluntary, among the voluntary agencies, which it would include even missionaries in that period.
Uh-huh.
Secondly, I think that it did raise questions first in the U.S. government bureaucracy, and those questions, you know, we don't know when those questions somehow click in, you know, with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that that was a very useful role for IVS to play, and I would say it's
an internal conscience.
Yeah.
Okay.
And thirdly, I think that there was a fairly significant role that IVS played in eventually influencing Congress and encouraging people like William Fulbright and Wayne Morse and those very early people who were way out and alone in their critique of the war. And they opened doors for us to talk to other senators and representatives as we moved about Congress. Finally, I think that IVS provided and played an enormous role in giving confidence and encouraging the peace movement in the churches in their search for a coherent understanding of the war, a coherent critique, so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those things were IVS.
Yeah.
All of that. There are those who are more in the development, those of us who are more in the other side, but we're part of that family. And we had to have each other, or else, because for us, in that period at least, to do the justice-making work, we had to have the legitimacy of the development folks. The development folks couldn't do anything much that was worth it unless they had some sort of clarification of their real identity.
That the political
provided. That the political provided.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if I'm getting at an answer, but that's where I come out on this. I tend to be a person where you make up policy as you go along, but I also believe that you do need review committees and mm-hmm. boards of directors, and you, and if you have them, you have to take them seriously. Don't just manipulate them.
Yeah.
And I think that it was an enormous stretch for most of the IVS board of directors to understand what we were trying to work out in Vietnam.
And did they understand?
Oh, they'd use language like the Palace Revolt and so forth to
yes.
talk about us. I don't think, but I do have to say, this is sort of almost an in-house. I mean, I spent so many hours arguing with Bill Snyder. Bill Snyder was often on chairperson of the executive committee or president of the board. He was a main founder, and he was one that hung in. He just died a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. And he was the executive secretary of MCC. And he was a sort of one of these towering figures who could be quite inflexible and would say more than you wanted to hear, so that he would have to deal with your own sloppy thinking. And he knew every way, you know. He was power.
You know. Yeah.
And but I think that he gradually came to respect what we were about. He saw that we had limits on both sides of our politics and our, whatever you want to call it, our faith commitments or our prophetic this and that.
Uh-huh.
And it was very interesting. I was down doing a fundraiser, Eastern Pennsylvania. This wasn't long before he died. And here's Bill Snyder, who I used to, we'd shout at each other. And he was very nervous when I was around. I'd go to church conferences and boom, we'd be together and we'd be fighting right like that. I mean, not fighting, but...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I often said, Bill, why don't you talk this way to your own people?
Uh-huh.
Engage them. But anyway, you know, and he came up to me afterwards and said, Gene, you know, we didn't agree about too much of anything through the years, but... You know, we did an awful lot of good, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I think Lou Hoskins would say that too. Now, Lou's, I think, still alive.
And he was what?
He was the Quaker piece of the thing.
Of the IVS board.
Yeah. And see, in those earlier days, they had a Quaker and a Mennonite and a Brethren. That kind of. There were others. There was Andrews and some others that. And then, for many years. It lost all that kind of mooring, and I've been trying to get a little bit of that back, actually. Not that the peace churches have to predetermine what IVS is, but I do think that a NGO, that's the big language today, but
right, yeah,
a nonprofit working in these situations that have so much ambiguity, not a bad idea to have some folks around who understand what it's like to be a minority in this world.
Uh-huh.
And have some faith commitments or have some political commitments that...
Some moral philosophical grounding.
Yeah, some philosophical grounding could keep this thing going.
Yeah.
And So, I mean, it doesn't mean that any time you get a Mennonite or a Quaker or a Brethren, you're going to get that. We, in Vietnam, we felt like the board didn't help us much at all. We were always honked off at them. But in the end, I think they probably were more helpful than we realized at the time.
You know? Well, why did you feel that you were...
Well, they felt like they had always counseled us to stay, and then we, IVS can do an important work in Vietnam, and we're appreciated for our little... So... And, you know, we'd send emissaries back to explain to the board just how it is. You know all the stuff that you go through in these...
Well, yeah, there's always differences in any kind of administration between different levels. I mean, faculty hate administrators.
Oh, I know. Oh, you guys in the academic world.
Yeah.
I mean... The problem with... Well, you're not introverted, but so many academics are also introverted, too.
And conservative.
And conservative.
Oh, my God.
I could not survive in that world.
Yeah, when I get back, I'm going to... I think I'll have no problem, but just to put this off for a second. Speaking, yeah, it's back on again. I'm just watching the wheels turn, making sure that they're okay. What did you think of Dan Whitfield as the following... chief of party after the resignations.
I don't have an impression about that. On a personal level, I always liked Danny.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like Danny, and I think that he was successful in pulling together the various strands of IVS.
You mean in the wake of the resignations?
Yeah, in the wake of the resignations. I also think that it was an enormously difficult period because there was polarization inside and outside of IVS, and it was a time that was a challenge for any administrator.
And then he had the Tet Offensive to deal with.
Yeah. Do you know that...
what a time to walk in.
Do you know that 12 hours after that was to begin... I was supposed to go back to Vietnam.
Really?
I was in Alaska already, and that was the schedule. Each of us were to go back on a sort of a regular basis.
Oh, you mean you, Don,
yeah.
Willie,
yeah.
And Don again, Ron?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So that one of the four of you would always be in country?
Well, not necessarily quite like that, but at least we would go back for 2-3 weeks and get a sense of whether what we're saying is...
still holds.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I got out of the rhythm then, and I didn't get back into it again for another year or two.
Oh, so you were away from Vietnam for that long?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to Danny Whitfield. He's now a pastor.
Presbyterian, yes, and I visited him.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I saw him down in... He's not exactly in Carbondale. His address is that, but he's...
I've spoken to him on the phone a time or two.
Yeah.
And it's clear at the other end of the state. I know it was hard for him, but at least it didn't come apart, and that was something.
No, I mean, on tape or off tape, he was. I had a growing respect for him. I asked Don Luce about Whitfield, and he has a great deal of respect for the job that he did. And really, I mean, he told me that when he was interviewed for the job, he really wasn't told all of what he felt later that he should have been told about how low the morale was within the organization and the divisions between people and such, and it was just shocking to him, and he just poured himself into trying to see as many volunteers, every one of them, face to face to talk.
And he was the right person to do that.
Yeah, well, he's a very good person for that, yeah. And then as soon as that's calming down, then the Tet Offensive happens, you know. And he's got to reduce the organization by half or more, you know, in the wake of that. So, but I didn't know if you know, you obviously knew him, but I didn't know if you had experience with him as an administrator. And so this is not quite...
I'm not necessarily head-on for this, but I liked him then, I liked him before, and I still have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that question just popped into my mind as we were concluding. I said, oh, I should ask that. As a kind of not the last question, but probably the next to last, unless something else pops into my mind. What would you say that IBS did for you in your own personal development?
Well, the IBS experience, which for me in a sense was 10 years, not just 4 years.
Right.
It made me deal with the post-World War II world. It made me become, to develop at least some political ability. It gave me the opportunity to deepen moral convictions. It was the context in which I developed confidence to speak and to act in this world. IBS was, it was probably for me much more important than college or anything else in that early part of my life. It's only in the last 4, 5, 8 years that I've really become aware of what an enormously gifted group of people I was privileged to work with. I didn't know it. I knew it, but when you see the accomplishments and the devotion and the integrity of these folks as they move through life, then you realize how privileged you were.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily think that way at age 25 or at age 30. In the same way that you can.
Don and Jim and Tom and Sally and whatever.
Yeah, they're just friends.
Yeah.
You know? But now at age 56, I can see, how much I have been, how much I have received from this group of people. If you were to pin me down on whether I learned to be a decent, a good, or a superior administrator in IBS, I'm not so sure that happened. I'm not even sure I know a whole lot more about what development is.
How do you know when you're developed?
I know that I have enormous questions about those who say they're going into development. I always think, oh my God, help us from these people. But I think IBS did what it should have done in that time. It genuinely and engaged with culture. It authentically tried to identify with middle and lower middle levels of society. I think that it tried to tell the truth. And we also tried to reach beyond the boundaries of being Americans.
Yeah.
And some of those
have rubbed off on you too.
Yeah, they rubbed off on me, and I was also helpful, and I was a part of the creating of that.
Uh-huh.
And I think that any international organization ultimately has to deal with that stuff, and I think that we were very early in pushing that. Rather than saying the goal, the end product, is the delivery of 14 pumps or whatever.
Yeah.
And that change, even our own change, comes from the interchange, this complex of material. And then to be able to reduce it down simple enough to talk about it.
Yeah. I thought of a couple of things. The first will probably be fairly short.
Okay.
When you're talking about interchange and working with people, was what you got out of the IBS experience, at least the in-country part, pretty much equal to what you were able to give back to the Vietnamese?
I think I gave as best I could to the Vietnamese in country. I don't think that was all that profound. in the long run, I think it was a fair exchange in, if you add on the work to end the war.
All right, but what about the volunteer years?
The volunteer years, I gave some. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have given more.
Yeah, so you probably profited more from the volunteer years.
Yeah.
And it was only ultimately balanced by the work back in the United States.
I think it was a fair exchange when I added all.
When you add on, the one, okay.
I don't have any sense of hidden guilt about being in Vietnam and benefiting so much. I don't feel like I exploited the Vietnamese by being there.
No, I don't think any volunteer feels that way, but I think all of them regret, rather than feel guilt, regret that they profited so much that it was almost impossible to give back to the Vietnamese in same measure that they received from the Vietnamese.
I'm not quite as high as some of those. I know those voices, too, and I'm not quite as high. And looking at myself and sort of taking a measurement, I feel like it was a fair exchange over the 10-year period for me.
Yeah, right. Well, the 10-year, the post-volunteer in-country experience balanced it off.
Uh-huh.
Not everybody had that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they just say, well, gee, I got so much out of it. I don't know if I really did that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think back at the people I worked with in the Philippines as a volunteer, and I don't think I gave anywhere near as much as I got out of it the experience at a personal level. That was the quick thing that
I understand what you're saying.
That was a quick question that I had. The other one, I remembered that we had talked about this a little bit off tape, but I forgot to say anything. And that is about Peter Hunting.
Oh yeah.
Because he was in your group and of course died, and the circumstances of his death and how that affected you and the other volunteers.
Peter's death was just a real important experience. I still remember getting the cable, and I got it a couple days, day or two late. I just got a plane to Saigon, and I could hardly keep myself together. I couldn't believe. It's one of those where you wished it was you instead of the other person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter was he was really one of us, you know. He was right in the middle of everything we were about, you know. We were a team, you know. And it was unbelievable that he wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of the several points where I had to deal with death in Vietnam. And I think when you deal with death, you grow. And I think that, I mean, in a sort of a mystical sense, I think that Peter has given something to all of us that is that we have taken care of, and that we have poured back into the world. And it has been, and I was able to tell his sister that, who lives in California near San Francisco. Evidently, that whole experience was very independent from us. It was very profound for the family, and the family almost came apart over it. And
oh,
so
sure, yeah.
Have you talked to the family?
No, but I can understand.
And, but anyway, his younger sister, I spent a whole Sunday afternoon talking to her about it. She wanted all the details. This is 25 years later. She wants all the details.
Oh, really? Oh, 25. So it's fairly recent.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, 3-4 years ago I was out there.
That's fairly recent.
Yeah. And she, you know, you don't remember all the details. But I certainly remember Peter. And I don't have any doubt but what his motivations would have been, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was a very important experience. I suspect it was especially important for Willie and John Summer and myself. We were in the same group. For Don, it was important because it was probably the first IVSer that was killed.
Yeah.
And for other people, it's their own personal story, you know.
Yeah.
Jeez, it was...
And his death was really a dumb luck sort of thing, wasn't it?
Well, that's, remember I said I wish I would have investigated it?
Yeah.
More carefully. I didn't. I didn't. I mean, that was way down the Delta. I was in the center.
Yeah.
It's, you know... I guess it was dumb luck.
That's the most consistent story I hear, that he had just passed a convoy and there was a... an ambush for the convoy just a little further, and his jeep comes along, and so they fire first.
Yeah, you need to ask questions. You just need to ask more than that provided.
Yeah.
And later we learned that. We learned that we need to ask questions. We learned that we need to be careful.
Yeah. But there were some reports that he had been shot at close range. And there were newspaper reports that even Don was saying, oh, no, not true. So, you know, the press often gets things wrong.
Oh, they get it so wrong, don't they?
Yeah. So that's why I dredge it up, not just to dredge a memory. But I, on a personal level, as I've been researching, let me pause. Turn this back on again. I'm not sure how much tape is left on this side. We may be, oh, yeah, there's... Well, there might be enough for the last question, and that is... Good. I better repeat the question so it's on the tape, because I think I put it on the leader, you know, before. But... What have I not asked that you think might be important? Or have, you know, I've covered all the bases.
I can't really think of anything. I just would conclude by saying I think that what you're doing is a very useful thing, and I think it's very good for people to talk about this part of their lives. I suspect that there are folks out there who haven't talked about it as much as they should. And
why should they have?
Maybe there's unresolved stuff, or there's whatever. The other thing is that I think that whole moment of history, it does reflect how a few people can make a difference and make a stand and make choices.
Yeah.
And go against the mainstream, and it's a very encouraging story.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's, and for me, it's very special to be part of it. That's all I have.
Okay.
I'm done.
You're done. Okay, well, my thanks to you.
Yeah, thank you.
And I guess it's about time to turn this off. It's about 5 minutes past nine, We've talked on a little bit. I guess... We didn't really start at 5, we started later than that, but okay. We're on 2.5 of 1 hour tapes.
Will you get a secretary to transcribe that, or?
First I'll turn this off and say good night.
Good night.